I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Okay, we are back with you on this Friday night at Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com. We are very anxious to welcome in our next guest because it is time to roll up our sleeves. We're going to head to the SEC and preview the upcoming college football season, specifically the Florida Gators, who are definitely looking to get back on track after the program sank to, some unimaginable depths in 2013. They're hoping to avoid the free fall after recording that disappointing 4-8 record that included losses at home against Vanderbilt and Georgia Southern. I mean, this was the program's worst showing since 1979 and seven consecutive losses. So we are delighted to welcome back to our program Pat Dooley. He is a sports columnist at the Gainesville Sun. And of course, you can check out his podcast at gatorsports.com. Pat, it's nice to have you with us tonight.
Great to be here.
Well, we are ready for some college football now that August is here. And obviously, as I just mentioned, the Gators were decimated with injuries, and they also had some serious offensive woes. Give our audience tonight a reasonable expectation for Florida in 2014. Because I have to tell you personally, this is a very difficult team to forecast.
You know, it's been interesting this offseason because they're getting, I think, almost too much love. You know, a lot of people are saying dark horse playoff team, and they'll definitely be back. And there are no guarantees. I think they've got a really good football team. But it's like I told a group I spoke to the other night, there's about nine of those in the SEC, you know, that have a talented roster. And Florida's got the luxury of having a quarterback who's at least played some, you know, and Jeff Driscoll. And I think seven of the SEC teams don't even know who their quarterback is right now. So it's certainly going to be an interesting season because their schedule's tough again. I've pointed out to people it's actually more manageable than it was a year ago. A year ago, they played one home game in 47 days, and that was just ridiculous. So in that way, it is more manageable, but it's still brutal. I mean, when you go, you know, Alabama, LSU, South Carolina, Georgia, I mean, they don't miss anybody except Auburn, really, that's a contender. So it's going to be a tough schedule, a tough season, but they're good enough to be in contention to win the East. They're good enough to win the East. They're good enough to win the SEC. I don't think there's a great team in the SEC right now as we sit here. So they've got a chance to do that. But they also could go 6-6, you know, or 7-5, and we'll probably be on a coaching search when that happens.
Well, I hear some optimism in your voice. I mean, do you believe that the Gators could perhaps be one of the most improved teams in the SEC?
Oh, they'll be better. They have to be because unless the same injuries hit them. I mean, people have to understand that last year it wasn't just the number of injuries. It was who was injured. They lost their right tackle before the season ever started, and they really didn't have any depth there. So they moved a guard to tackle, Tyler Moore, who had never played in the SEC. He was a transfer and was not a tackle. And you know, he must be getting tired of watching all that film of Michael Sam going by him because they must have shown it 100 times. But they weren't good there. And then you lose your quarterback in the first quarter of the third game. He's your offensive leader. You lose your defensive leader and by far best player, Dominic Easley, in practice after the third game. And Dominic Easley, good enough to, even with a torn ACL, suffered in that practice, drafted in the first round this year. That's how good he is and was. So, you know, I don't think there's any question that this, unless they have some kind of catastrophic injury, they've got to be better. Now, what does better translate to? I think they've got a better situation in offense with a new coordinator in there and Kurt Roper, but we don't know how that's going to translate. He was really good at Duke, did a good job there. Just SEC defenses are different, you know, than ACC defenses. But we also saw Gus Malzahn take a defensive back and turn him into the arguably the best player in the country last year with that same kind of offense. So I think we're all kind of I mentioned this the other night. I said it's like there's a big Christmas present under the tree, and it doesn't have any form to it. We don't know what it's going to be. We could open it up, and it could be a new iPad, or it could be a dead squirrel. We just don't know.
Hey, Pat Dooley is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Of course, he's a columnist with the Gainesville Sun, and it's got some great stuff on there in terms of talking about the Florida Gators. And, you know, I asked you about the optimism and perhaps that the Gators could have a significant turnaround. I mean, you point to teams in the SEC, Missouri, Auburn. I mean, they had huge success and huge turnarounds.
Well, it was a weird year last year, and that they came out of nowhere. Auburn, of course, had gone 3-9 the year before. Missouri, it was the team that came in and said, well, they're not ready for the SEC. And then they won games, though. They won close, tight games, and they found ways to win. Obviously, Auburn had the two miracle plays, but you need some of that. You need some luck. And I've said that before. If you have no luck, in fact, I went back and read the column I wrote in the preseason last year, and it was basically saying that any team needs some luck. Well, Florida got no luck. They got zero luck. And so this team could use some luck, but you got to have a little bit of it. I mean, you got to have some breaks unless you're a physically dominant, incredible team. Now, 08, that team didn't need any luck. That team had 22 NFL players on it. So, and I don't think there's a team like that in the SEC right now. I think everybody's going to need people to surprise. That somebody's going to have to step on the team. We don't have on our preseason all SEC teams now for almost everybody in this league, because with all the quarterbacks gone, all the skill players gone, LSU lost 8 juniors this year after losing 11 the year before.
Wow.
Auburn losing Trey Mason. They've already had 2 major injuries, including one of their starting offensive linemen. And their schedule is rough. Alabama's starting a quarterback who's never played in the SEC. Had just a mop-up duty at FSU. I have no idea what's going to happen in this conference. Even South Carolina, everybody's raving about their quarterback, Dylan Thompson, but I saw the guy play last year. He was pretty average. So, and maybe this is the year he excels and he's really good, but they had to bring Connor Shaw in off the bench with a bad knee to win the Missouri game because he was so bad. So, I think it's wide open this year.
Are you saying that the SEC, perhaps it might be down a little bit this year?
Well, I don't know that it's necessarily down, because all of these schools that I'm talking about, they've got flaws and questions, and they've all been at the top of the recruiting classes for the last 3 or 4 years. And that includes Florida, obviously Alabama. They all have got players. Now, those players may be unproven, untested. We don't know if they're going to be able to step in and play in this conference and be really good and when the lights are on. But there's a lot of... I don't know that the SEC necessarily will be down. However, it could be a year where because there are so many unproven players, they cannibalize each other, and you end up not getting any teams in the playoff.
Pat Dooley with us at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. We got to step aside for a quick commercial break, and we will be rejoined with the columnist from the Gainesville Sun, Pat Dooley. We are so glad you're joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. We'd love to hear from you. Join us at Twitter, at @eRadioSports. We're going one-on-one with Pat Dooley, well-known sports columnist with the Gainesville Sun, as we are zeroing in on the Florida Gators, giving the preview. They're looking to get the bounce, the reprieve, after that 4-8 season last year. Will Muschamp entering into his fourth season. So we talked about it, how Florida has struggled. They were hit hard with a slew of injuries. What is the biggest issue that they need to solve coming into the 2014 season?
Well, the number one thing for the fans is the offense. The offense has got to be, it's one thing to lose, but to lose and be boring is bad, bad combination.
Yeah.
They need to be better at that regard. But to me, I think the key is up the middle at defensive tackle and at safety, where they've got some guys who played but have never been anything special. And I'm just curious whether they're going to step up. Leon Orr is a fifth-year senior. He's actually one of the last 8 players left there that was signed by Urban Meyer. And, is it time for him to play well? you know, and Darius Cummings being the other tackle. Their depth there is very young. At safety, you know, Marcus May, Jabari Gorman, these guys, you know, Brian Poole, whoever it ends up being, those guys haven't played a whole lot. So that's where I'm just curious to see how they respond at those two positions. Because everybody kind of assumes that because it's Will Muschamp, they'll be fine on defense. And I don't think it's necessarily, I mean, you can't just guarantee that. So, I mean, look, I think their offense has to be better. There's no way it could be as bad as it was last year. If it's adequate and the defense plays up to Muschamp standards, they can be a really good team. If the offense is really good and the defense is better than maybe I think they're going to be, they could be a national contender. If the defense struggles and the offense has to try to outscore them and they can't do that, you know, it could be a mediocre season again. So I think that's the big thing. I want to see how those tackles and those safeties play.
You know, Pat, you had said earlier a lot of unknowns in terms of the impact of the new offensive coordinator, Kurt Roper, of coming over from Duke. I mean, so what do you think your offensive expectations might be and with this new up-tempo offense and a lot of curiosity in terms of how the players are going to adapt to that?
Yeah, I think all of us are kind of eager to see how it is, and we're not going to find that out in the first two games and maybe not even the third one. They play Kentucky at home. We'll find out in Alabama. We'll find out against LSU. You know, in those kind of games, that's when you're going to really see what this offense is and what they've got in store for us. But, look, it's going to be – they're going to put Jeff Driskel in the shotgun exclusively. That's what he was recruited here to play in.
Okay.
And that's what he was best at. In 2012, when they won 11 games, he was in the shotgun a lot. And when he was in the shotgun, that's when they had their best offense. So you're going to see him in the shotgun. You see some more up-tempo. I was talking to one of their corners, Vernon Hargraves, the other day, and he said, look, where this offense kills you as a defensive back is they'll take their shots down the field, and you come back, you're not subbing out because, you know, first of all, you're Vernon Hargraves, so you're not coming out of the game.
Uh-huh.
And they bring in a fresh receiver and go deep again. So I said, well, I did not know you were permitted to throw the ball more than 10 yards down the field because I watched this team for 2 years. But apparently they're going to throw the ball down the field some, and I think that in itself is going to make Florida fans happy. I don't even think it matters if they complete them. Just to make an attempt to do something down the field, I think will get people excited. So it'll be interesting. We're all kind of eager to see exactly how it works, and how it works especially in big games.
You know, Pat, you talk about how you're excited. I got to wonder about the players. They're a great anticipation that they've got, and just the opportunity now with this new offense to be able to make big plays. All I can say is you better be in shape, because tempo, speed, timing, I mean, it has certainly changed significantly.
Yeah, you know, college football kind of changed overnight. It was really weird. It was a game that was really played with the exception of teams like Oregon. It was played in a way that they basically were running the ball, play defense. It was old-style SEC football. And you saw Alabama and LSU have great success doing that. And then all of a sudden, with the Melzon and Gary Pinkel and some other coaches came in, and all of a sudden it just changed. And I think that's why you see not only is Muschamp changing his offense up, but you see Nick Saban hires Lane Kiffin. You know, he's not going to try to win 17-14 anymore. He knows he needs to score points. So all of college football kind of made a change, and it's all cyclical. You know, it could go back in 5 years. We may see everybody trying to run the ball and play defense again. It's just the way it works.
Well, we certainly have seen that even in the Big 12 Conference. We had Coach Patterson, Gary Patterson, on just a few weeks ago, and he was talking about just the offensive changes that are taking place. Talk to us about the offensive line. They've really lacked toughness over the past couple of years.
Well, I think that, you know, having Chaz Green back is going to help. I think their first five is pretty good. I think they've got a couple of good backups. The question is depth. They can't afford injuries right now because their depth is very young and hasn't been in the trenches. So right now, that's an area where they really can't afford an injury. I think quarterback and offensive line are the two biggest ones. But their starters are pretty solid. I mean, they're good players. Tyler Moore is a good guard. He's not a tackle, though. We found that out. I think having Chaz Green, I think DJ Humphries on the other end, you know, at tackle, those are two pretty good tackles there. I'm curious to see Max Garcia at center. He was a guard last year and pretty good solid player. As a center, you know, he's got to be the captain out there, so we'll see how he does.
And obviously, the most obvious question, of course, is Jeff Driscoll. I mean, he's healthy. He's ready to go. He had that broken right leg last year. A great deal of anticipation. What were your thoughts watching, listening to him in that preseason media day?
He's very confident right now. And he even said to me the other day, he says, you know, this may be surprising from a team that went 4-8, but we're a really confident team. And I think they have confidence in this new offense. He's got a little chip on his shoulder. He's heard some of the things. I mean, it's amazing some of the negativity that's come his way for a guy who really, you know, only played 2+ games last year, but he threw a couple of picks. And I think the Miami game really hurt Florida fans. Losing that game down at Miami, probably the last time, maybe the last time they ever play, but it's certainly the last time they played for a long time. And to lose that game, and Jeff played a great game other than 3 plays, but those 3 plays cost him the game. And I think that kind of just left Gator fans with a sour taste. Then against Tennessee, he throws a pick 6 and gets hurt on the play. And I just sense that Gator fans aren't that confident in him. And I can tell him, look, he can be really good. He's a talented kid. And behind him, you got a true freshman, Will Greer. I mean, I don't think Skylar Morningway can play. So, you better hope he doesn't get hurt. You better hope he plays well.
Well, it was pretty obvious, too, when he did get hurt, that Florida was unprepared to play without him. What is the backup situation this year for the Gators?
Well, they had Tyler Murphy. They had to dumb, I don't want to say dumb down the offense, but they had to change the offense. They couldn't do the things they were going to do before. And then he got hurt, hurt his shoulder against LSU, and it was just, he tried to play through it, but was just awful. Actually, he handed Vanderbilt the game. I mean, Vanderbilt, I think, got 150 yards of offense and scored 34 points. So, then he finally couldn't go anymore, and then he went to Morningway, and it was just, he just couldn't throw. So, backup quarterback, Will Greer, is an unbelievable athlete. I hope he gets to play. They also have a kid whose name is going right by me right now, who's an incoming freshman who they would probably run some wildcat with him. They're going to play a backup quarterback in that first game and run some things with. And now who it will be, we'll see. My gut is it's going to be Will Greer, but there's been a lot of talk about redshirting him and getting some distance between him and Driscoll, because Driscoll technically could come back next year. And he's in grad school, but he has another year of eligibility if he wants it.
Pat, we appreciate you joining us. We look forward to catching up with you and the start of college football, okay?
Anytime.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR. Okay, we are back inside the Quicken Loans studios at YSR, and right now it is time to head to Lincoln, Nebraska, and visit with our favorite Husker, that is our very own Jason Peter, who joins us each and every week on the show. And all I can say is, after a week off and vacation with the family, Jason, we have got a lot of ground to cover. It's great to have you back with us at YSR. Thanks, Jay.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so a number of things I want to talk about. Let's first hit on some NFL and the fact that the Cleveland Browns, they've made a decision that Johnny Manziel, he's not going to start on Saturday night in that preseason opener against the Lions. So Hoyer gets the nod. Do you agree with that?
I do, and I think it's just it's the right decision. Just when you look at the whole picture, I would imagine that for the 4 preseason games, they'll go Hoyer start 1, Manziel 2, Hoyer 3, Manziel 4. But, the big question is who's going to start week 1 of the regular season. And I just think it makes sense to start Hoyer. If you bypass Hoyer and you go Manziel, and let's just say he struggles, then you put Hoyer in there, and it's, maybe he plays well, maybe he doesn't. But I just think from an organization standpoint, you got nothing really, I think, to lose by playing Hoyer. He's the guy, he's the returning guy. He's kind of, the incumbent. Yes, he's coming off of surgery, but he's won you a few games last year. He played well. And if he struggles, then it's no big deal, right? Then you can go to Manziel.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just kind of let him do his thing, because that was kind of, the hand that was dealt you, so to speak. But if you skip right over Hoyer on week one of the regular season and you go right to Manziel, I think there'll always be question marks as to did you do the right thing. And, you know, I imagine that it's not going to be just one game and the other guy's out if he struggles, unless he really, really struggles to the point that it's just embarrassing. But I think, you know, whoever gets the nod, and I would imagine it'd be Hoyer, he'll probably at least get, you know, three games at the beginning of the season.
Well, a lot of folks, including myself, very anxious to see Johnny in action. He's got a lot to prove, and you have to wonder, too, I mean, Detroit, you know they were hoping and praying that they'd have an opportunity to face Manziel and Johnny Football, right?
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of teams that kind of have that game bullseye with, you know, the attention that Manziel is drawn, and a lot of people think, you know, that stuff that he's done has been, I guess, not representing the shield very well. And, you know, it's hard to argue with him. He's obviously young. You know, he's come out. He's said that he's made some mistakes, that he'd like, you know, a do-over on some stuff. Unfortunately, you don't get that luxury of being able to do it, But yeah, you know, Manziel is—he's captivating, and you know, I know there's a lot of defensive players that are just that are kind of licking their chops. But you know, this is—he's kind of—I think in the same league as, let's say, when Mike Vick came into the NFL. And for as much as defensive players would love to get that just ear hole shot on him, you know, or just putting that helmet, the crown of your helmet, right underneath
yeah.
his chin strap. He doesn't usually end up in situations like that unless it's just kind of, you know, where he's spinning out of something and he doesn't see something coming. I mean, that's what makes Johnny Manziel is he's just so elusive, maybe more so than Mike Vick was when he came into the league. You know, so he may be all that defensive players can handle and some. So, you know, I don't know if you're going to see a lot of guys, you know, taking stuff into the media, saying, yeah, I can't wait to play Manziel, you know, I want to do this, want to do that. I don't know if guys will do that because you've been able to see how dangerous he is with his feet and just kind of that escapability that he has.
Johnny Manziel, I mean, he certainly proved, Jason, that he was a gamer in college. Do you anticipate that he will be in the NFL?
It's hard to say. It really is. You know, anybody who says that they know for sure, you know, is lying through their teeth. You just never know when the lights go on. It's different than when the lights go on in college. You know, it's just it's a more violent game. The tempo's a lot quicker. You know, now it's a livelihood for a lot of these guys, for all of these guys. You know, it's the way that they kind of feed their families, so to speak. So, you know, I think everybody is very interested in to see what happens in Cleveland this year. You know, I mean, just from that standpoint alone, you know, and the popularity standpoint, I mean, it was a win for Cleveland drafting Manziel. Otherwise, you know, has Cleveland done anything other than hire a new coach that would make people on a national level say, I want to see what happens with Cleveland? Probably not. But, you know, they have Manziel, and he's going to bring in viewers. A lot of people want to tune in to see what happens. I'm one of them. I want to see what he does. You know, does his college game translate to the NFL? Obviously, they're not going to ask him to do the same stuff. I don't think, you know, offensive coordinators, you know, they kind of hold their breath every time their quarterback decides he's going to leave the pocket. You know, these are the guys that are the face of the franchise. These are the guys that make, you know, the big, big, big bucks. So, you know, I think they'll try to limit maybe the amount of times that you know, he'll just want to take off. But they also want him to do that because that is part of his game. And it also makes it a lot more difficult for defenses. You know, when you have to account for a guy that is just as dangerous, maybe if not more, than the running back with the ball in his hands, that creates some problems for defense coordinators.
You're listening to the voice of Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment tonight at YSR, the Big East Sports Show. And Jason, we just talked about it. You know, so many on and off the field. Folks just salivating at the chance to watch Johnny play. Let's talk about Brian Hoyer. I mean, he played college ball at Michigan State. He was undrafted in 2009, bounced around the NFL for the first couple of years, finally finding a home. I mean, it really is a feel-good story in many ways.
Yeah, and people shouldn't sell him short. I mean, obviously the resume is not that long, but he's studied, you know, under Tom Brady for a while. You know, he's bounced around a little bit here and there. Did well in the opportunities that he was given. It's unfortunate that he had an injury. You know, and that's another thing that people have almost, you know, forgotten about, is that, you know, he had knee surgery. And sometimes it takes a year or two to come back. It's unfortunate for him, obviously, because you got a high-profile rookie that's breathing down your neck. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But Hoyer, you know, from the sound bites that you hear from teammates, you know, they think the world of this guy. Obviously, you got to go out and you got to execute week after week after week. So, you know, a four-game resume, ultimately, if it turns into, you know, a 16-game, you get a better idea of what Brian Hoyer can do. But, yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. You know, guys don't stick around in the NFL for 5 and 6 years if they're not doing something right.
Okay, our NFL, our college football analyst, Jason Peter, who joins us each and every week at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. We look forward to talking to you next week as the countdown's on. Jason, ready for some college football and to get after it and start doing some more previews. Thanks, Jay.
Can't wait for it. Thanks
Absolutely.
For having me.
You bet. Much more straight ahead at YSR. Join us at Twitter, at eRadioSports. We will be right back. Okay, welcome back inside the Quicken Loans Studios at Yahoo Sports Radio. And we would absolutely love to hear from you tonight. Join us at Twitter, at eRadioSports. And you can email the show at elissa@yahoosportsradio.com. Also, check out our podcast page at yahoosportsradio.com/podcast. Well, up next, it is time to focus our attention on the big weekend in Valhalla, the PGA Championship. We have a very special guest we always have with us. That is Patrick Livingston. He is a PGA teaching professional. He is the CEO of National Golf Schools. It's always a pleasure to have you with us, Pat. Good evening. How are you on this Friday night?
Wonderful. It's you know, it's a major tournament going on here, and just can't wait to see how it breaks out.
Well, obviously the biggest storyline Wednesday was the surprise return of Tiger Woods at the PGA Championship and receiving, you know, treatment on his back. He's ready to go, that he had re-injured last Sunday at the Bridgestone Invitational. Now, some analysts, I have to tell you, Pat, they seem shocked by his return, but let's not forget that Tiger, throughout his career, he has kind of proven to be a bionic man. I mean, he's muscled through a number of injuries, whether it's been knee, neck, back, or stress fractures, and even his ankle.
You know, it's really true. It's kind of interesting. His shot was, he had a bunker shot. Actually, he was on top of bunker and hitting out of there, having there, kind of fell back in his bunker, and it looked like he had strained the same back area where he had had a recent operation. But looking at it, it was actually a soft tissue, more of a you know, muscle spasm than any area, you know, any problems in the area back that he just recently been, you know, had surgery on. So he lucked out on that, and he determined it was a soft tissue issue. They went out and he actually played, you know, nine holes the day before, walked the back nine, did some chipping and putting, and didn't have any problems. And he's you know, going on playing in the tournament.
Well, there was tremendous anticipation for the return of Tiger. I mean, it was almost palatable. I mean, when you watched him, even in the practice round, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, I mean, you survey his swing, his body. What do you see?
This, you know, Tiger has had so many injuries over the, you know, his career. He has had 5 knee injuries. He's had 2 Achilles tendon injuries, which are very, very difficult to, you know, come back from. He just had a series of injuries, back problems, you know, more than, you know, the average pro has out there. Yet he has capacity to come back and recover from them. But I think they're starting to take its toll. It's not the Tiger that we've known, you know, 4, 5, 6 years ago, where he can actually come back. Actually, he came back and won the, you know, the tournament in Orlando, Palmer's tournament. Right, you know, first time back after a serious surgery. But he's, you know, he's 38, 39 years old, and it's starting to wear on him.
Patrick Livingston, PGA teaching professional, the CEO of National Golf Schools. We're going to talk about that and highlight that tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. But right now we're focusing our attention on Tiger Woods, his return, keeping an eye, a sign on, you know, a number of different things. But you have to, I also, you know, wonder about, you know, distance control with his irons. I mean, can he move the ball both directions without him having problems with his back? I mean, what do you see there in terms of with his distance control?
Well, his new, his new instructor, Foley, is changing his game. And that's only a year or so that they've been working on it. And the amazing part is, now, this is the third time in his career when he's made major, major changes in his swing. He went to Butch Harmon initially, tightened his swing up a little bit from his early days, and went to different instructors, to change his swing. And now he's with Foley, and they're actually, in Orlando working on that whenever he's not on the tour, when he's able to practice it. And some of us kind of just step back and say, my goodness, this is the best player in the world.
Yeah.
Why in the world would you totally change your swing? But that's Tiger Woods. He feels that he has capacity to make any change he needs to make, and going to enhance his game. But I think things are up in the air on this the last year that he's been trying to change his swing.
Well, Tiger Woods, no doubt, he's had to deal with a number of setbacks. Obviously, we were just talking about the back injury. 2014 has really been a major struggle for Tiger. We're going to talk about Phil Mickelson here in just a minute. But you have to wonder what's going on, the battle of his mind. I mean, that's got to be difficult when you have played at such a high level. You've had that level of consistency, and you're not able to achieve that.
Well, it's true, and you've always heard this. There's a lot of psychology books out there saying that this game is 90% mental. Well, there's no question that he has the physical capabilities to play as good as he's ever played, even with the injuries he's had. But if there's a little chink in your mental armor, it is a very, very, very difficult game. And I think if we look to the mental side a little bit, things he's happened in his life, and divorces are tragic, and they really take a toll on you. He has two children now that he loves. He has to spend time with them. So he's had some recent distractions that is affecting his golf game.
What is your view in terms of how long he can last with his stamina? You were saying he's 38, 39 years old.
Well, he is in such good shape, even though he's injury prone. Okay, even though he's injury prone, he has a tremendous body. And he could be effective up into his mid-40s if he can, keep healthy and if his life is settled. And that's, that's what we have to look for over the next 6-7 years. I mean, Nicholas won his last major at the Masters, and he's 46 years old. So it's certainly, you can certainly do a lot of damage between, 38 and 46 if he's looking to get those, a few more majors he needs to tie or beat Nicholas.
Patrick Livingston with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Hey, we want to hear from you. Join us at Twitter at E-Radio Sports. Patrick, a regular guest on our program, a PGA teaching professional, one of the very best in the business, CEO of National Golf Schools. Now, this is the guy that I know my sons, they absolutely love him. Lefty Phil Mickelson. 2014 has been so puzzling. I mean, he's not registered a top 10 finish, but then got on fire last Sunday and shoots a 62, the best round of the year, 10 birdies. It all came together. I know it's been very frustrating for him, but how do you assess the state of his game?
State of his game is with one club. He has putted so poorly, during the first part of this season, and at Firestone Country Club, a course that he loves. He got the putter going in the last round and shot a 62. He's as long as he's ever been, and he is he's a good iron player. But the putter has let him down, tremendously this year. And hopefully, he's found the secret that he's looking for, in that last round at Firestone. And he'll have a very, very interesting, rest of the year. He's still trying to qualify for the Ryder Cup. If that's so important to him, he's trying to show you know, Tom Watson, that he still has it and that he'd love to, you know, be on that Ryder Cup team.
Is he getting closer? I mean, are you optimistic about his game? I mean, because between Tiger and Phil, they've both been so unpredictable right now. It really is difficult to kind of forecast the future, what holds for both of these guys. And you got to remember, I mean, we've been spoiled throughout the years. I mean, they've been the dynamic duo, the 1-2 punch.
No, that's really true. And even though they're, they're later on in their careers, they're tremendous players, but they're slipping a little bit. And then the rest of the world is catching up and going by them. I mean, four out of the top five players in the world are on the European team. And really, this year will be the first time that the European team has ever been favored in the Ryder Cup. And that's kind of a telling stat that. And it's proven by their how high their players are ranked from top to bottom. They have a solid team, and we seem to be hurting a little bit without Tiger and Phil playing at their best.
Well, you're exactly right. Rory McIlroy has certainly been on fire. He's ascended as the world's top golfer, playing the best golf, especially over the past couple of months. How would you compare Rory to former great European players from the European players from the past, like a Nick Faldo?
Well, I think that, obviously he's got a chance to be better than Nick Faldo. He has three, major tournaments, and he's, 25 years old. Faldo didn't win until he actually spent some time with David Ledbetter in his late 20s before he started to win the major tournament. So Roy has every bit, the possibility of being better than Faldo. He hits the ball much further than him. He's an excellent putter. He has got an incredible golf mind. He is, he controls his emotions out there. Barring injury, barring some unforeseen events, Rory is unlimited. I mean, he won the PGA at Congressional by 8 shots. He's got all the talent and the proper frame of mind, to be the best player ever gone to Europe, especially in Northern Ireland.
Okay, we're out of time. Patrick Livingston has been with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. And, of course, you can go to National Golf Schools. You can give them a call at 877-580-1500 to find out more information on National Golf Schools. We appreciate the time, Pat. I'm sorry we just flat ran out of time, okay?
Oh, my pleasure. Look forward to seeing you in the future.
That, of course, was Patrick Livingston, PGA teaching professional, the CEO of National Golf Schools. We want to thank all of our guests, our lineup tonight, Mark Miller, MMA kickboxer and fighter who joined us. Also, Nancy Lieberman, Basketball Hall of Famer, Pat Dooley, the columnist with the Gainesville Sun, our very own Andy Pondillo, and Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. Again, I want to encourage you not to drink and drive. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports. Join us online at Twitter, @eRadioSports, and we will. I'll see you next week.